Now, y'all know I love McDonald's for a quick meal, especially if I'm out and about with the boys and need something to eat. I like food, and y'all know I like saving money, too. Did you know that you can save money with deals in the McDonald's app every single day? Yeah, you heard that right. There's a deal every day in the app. So if you are an avid McDonald's goer like me, you'll find the best value for your buck by using the app. One of my favorite things about the app is the ability to order ahead. So let's say I'm on the road, just picked up Axel from school, and know I promised him some McDonald's fries and a sundae, but don't want to have to wait in that long line. I open up the app and just place my order there. Then I can walk in and pick up my order when it's ready, no wait needed, especially if I time it right. And I love that you can also get a bunch of deals in the app as well. I just logged in and can get a free Big Mac with a minimum purchase of $1. But check it every day because the deals are always changing. Plus, make sure to share your birthday so McDonald's can celebrate with you with something special. Dream drivers save money with the McDonald's app. Nope, you must opt into rewards.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome to another Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. He's Jihadi White. Jihadi, is almost NBA draft lottery, the moment we've basically been waiting for since we saw this 23-24 Wizards team constructed. It seemed destined to end up in the lottery. How do you feel about the moment? Like, are you expecting good things here? Do you have a good feeling about it? How do you think this will play out for the Wizards?
No, I have a good feeling about it. I mean, in the end of the day, you know, after we had the season that we had, at least the good thing about it is you always can be able to get another pick, a good pick, you know, out of the lottery, one of the top four picks, which is good. You know, as far as the lottery is this year's, not a lot of guys that you really, really know like in previous years.
Yeah.
But it's always surprises every year.
I don't think there's a player of this caliber. I wouldn't bet on it, at least, but doesn't mean there isn't one. But the year that Anthony Edwards got picked first, there were a lot of people questioning who should be the top pick in that draft, too. And, you know, Minnesota, I think, I bet if you went back and looked, there were plenty of outlets that didn't give that draft pick like an A grade. So you never really know, and guys kind of overachieve, and there could be somebody in here that outperforms our expectations. So I'm just holding out hope that our front office is the front office that can find whoever that person is.
I mean, I think they will. And like you said, every year it's an overachiever, a guy you don't expect to come out and really make a name for himself. I mean, you didn't think Jalen Brunson would be as good as he is right now.
It's very true.
You know, so it's just, and like Anthony Edwards, you knew he was going to be good, but you didn't know he was probably going to be the second coming of, right, of the GOAT, you know? So
yeah, exactly.
You never know what you get out of these lottery picks, and so every team is really rolling the dice. Yeah. You're just trying to, you know, hedge your bet as much as possible.
Before we get going, brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, Hard Lemonades, and Bet Online. It's your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, match reports, all you can think of for all your favorite sports, especially NBA playoffs right now. As long as you're not a member of one of the NBA teams, feel free to bet on all of the games. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to place all your wagers. Like I said, live betting, all those kind of things, casino and card games, whatever you can think of, BetOnline has it. go to their website and use our promo code BELIEV, BLEAV, 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. So for anybody who hasn't been following this, which if you're a Wizards fan, I don't know why you wouldn't have been, the Wizards have a 52.1% chance of a top four pick and 14% chance of being the first overall pick. So just sort of in order, 14% chance of being number one, 13.4% chance of being number two, 12.7% chance of being number three, 12% chance of being number four, 27.8% chance of being the fifth pick, and a 20% chance of being the sixth pick. So their biggest individual odds of a particular pick are fifth, which is kind of scary when you look at it in a vacuum, but a 52% chance, so 50-50 shot, you're going to have a top four pick. I think as long as you're, if you're the Wizards, as long as you come out of this with a top four pick, you feel pretty good about it. Falling to like six after the year you just had, that'd be a pretty tough gut punch. It may not ultimately matter in a draft like this. Someone taken second could be as good as someone taken 11th or vice versa. But just from like, you know, you mentioned this last podcast, like the front office job is like sell hope to the fans right now. I just think that would be sort of like a spiritual kick in the nuts if they fell to sixth right now.
Yeah, it would be. And I don't think they will. I just don't, you know, like you said, 50-50 for the top four. The way things been going for them, and you know, I feel like we got energy on our side. So I think we'd be, you know, the top four, and then you know, and it's really even one through five is always a toss up. You know, in the league. I mean, everybody knows who one usually is, right? They're always concerned about one, but it just depends on what the team need between that one through five, right? So. If the Wizards, you know, want to go for a big, or they want to go for a point, or they want to go for a shooting guard, it's still those type of players usually fit between that one through five. As long as that player is not gone before, you know, they get that player they want. And so either way, if it is one through four, you know, we get four, we're still in good shape.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'm fine with it either way. Especially with this draft class.
Right. It, you know, like last year, they're one ping pong ball away from Victor Wembanyama. Like, that's tougher to me than dropping from one to six in a draft like this. It's just, I don't know. It just feels like this organization needs to get like a little luck going, a little positive momentum. Like, we're due for a couple breaks here. So I've seen some fans say, like, I'd rather get sixth this year and first next year in a better draft. But I'd rather, if we're bad, get first this year and get first next year again too. Like we saw Cleveland get a couple number one picks in a short amount of time. So
I think you're lucky just to get one through four, one through five, one through six anyway.
We'll take it.
I mean, if your first three picks out of this draft this year, it's the most likely overseas guys anyway. So no one would know them. So you can't be pretty much up or down either way once you get them, because most they would be pretty much unknown to most of the NBA fans. So let's just see what we get.
just as you mentioned, the kind of top prospects right now, if anybody's ever curious for a good site to look at, if you go to Rookie Scale, they do the consensus big board. So they take all the major mock drafts and sort of average out where they have people slotted to kind of give you an idea of on average where these guys are projected to go. So right now, French center Alex Sarr, who played in the Australian NBL this year, is the number one guy pretty much across most boards. ESPN actually has Zachary Risachet, 6'8"-ish, 6'9"-ish, French wing, guard wings, forward combo. Number two, Nikola Topic, a 6'7" Serbian point guard. Is number three, Donovan Klingon is the first of the college name. So anyone that watched college basketball in the NCAA tournament saw Klingon this year, 7'2" rim protector. Reed Shepard from Kentucky, 6'2" combo guard, number five. And Steph Castle, sort of a lockdown guard facilitator from UConn at number six. I think any of those guys help a franchise in need of a talent infusion right now. So I wouldn't really be mad kind of with whatever they just go with here.
If I had to wish one of those guys for the Wizards, it'd be the French wing, Risachet. Like, yeah. To me, that would be a perfect fit.
You just made, like, so I just tweeted this the other day. It's the reason I know this. And I said, I wouldn't be mad if Risachet was the Wizards pick. And I got a certain amount of grief from that from the fan base because there was a couple like tweets that have gone around about he just basically had like a month long shooting slump where he went like 1 for 30 from three. But that doesn't ultimately really matter to me. If you buy the shooting, you buy the shooting. They're going to come in. They're going to tweak it anyway. But if you're 6'9", you play good defense, you can put the ball on the floor a little bit, you have like a projectable jump shot, that's more important to me. I also kind of just like this dynamic French wing duo, putting him and Koulibaly together. And
yeah,
it's all the things you talked about early in the year with Koulibaly about like playing the right way, good fundamentals. Like, I think he would help this team from an IQ standpoint. And just something about rotating like a wing group of him, Koulibaly, and Denny next year is exciting to me. So I would not be mad at that at all either.
Yeah, I look at it as more versatility. Like, now I want a three-way player at least.
Yep.
And so I feel like he fits a lot of those facts where he's not just one-dimensional. He's not just a shooter, but he can drive. Also, he plays the foreign game right now. Yeah. Defender, have great size. And to me, you want to kind of get somebody to start to be a Kuzma-like type, create a Kuzma-like type of player. So, you know, Kuzma's, just in case we lose him or he goes somewhere else, or he's kind of becoming more of a veteran player now, you still can have that same impact. But even with a more versatile player that you can grow and you can build, you can mold. Why Kuzma's there too?
I think he'd be a good teacher for somebody like Risacher, to your point. Like, he's been a good mentor for people like Denny. You hear that kind of all the time from some of these young guys, is he's the one willing to take people under their wing. And I think that's sort of the blueprint, is hopefully like a more efficient, slightly better shooting Kuzma as the player, you know, you can kind of turn into. I've heard some Wizards fans sort of dismiss it as French Otto Porter. I think we dismiss how good Otto Porter really was. Like, people get mad about him getting the max contract, and then because of the injuries, never really living up to that. But he got a big deal for a reason. When you shoot 14, or when you shoot, you average 14 and 6 and 3, and you shoot 45% from 3, and you play really good defense, that's a player I would happily take out of a draft where it seems like a total crapshoot. And I think he's got more sort of creation potential than Otto did. And so to me, if it's Otto with a little wiggle, like, that's not a bad pick to me. I would actually feel kind of good about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think sometimes when people watch basketball or when guys get these contracts, they don't understand how valuable a defensive player is.
Yeah, right.
So they're like, well, why did they pay him? Like, because he also... All he can play defense also.
Yep.
Right? And playing defense is a 50% of the game. Right? Mm-hmm. So when you have a guy, and let's be real, great players don't like to play defense as much. Right. As
somebody's got to do it. Yeah,
somebody got to do it. So when you have a good player that's also great on defense, has a take accountability on defense as far as they want to be there, right? That's good. And that's somebody that's worth giving some money to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you watch the Wolves right now, like, it's a copycat league, right? Like, who wouldn't want a Jaden McDaniels, but plus more projectable offense? I mean, that's what you're hoping for if you can take a Risacher. He's probably not got this defensive ceiling that McDaniels does, but he's long, he's athletic, and he's pretty good laterally. Like, I don't see why he can't be a good wing defender. And he probably comes in more ready to contribute day one offensively than McDaniels was. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe you say, oh, I wouldn't want Jaden McDaniels, you know, third overall or whatever. But in a draft like this, I think you got to look at it as like adding like six. So the third pick this year is really like the ninth pick last year or something like that. So,
yeah,
it's like you cut the top four or five, six off from last year's draft. So I'd be cool with it. Like, and I'm also going to try really hard to just like trust the front office here. Take who you think is best. Hopefully you put in the time, you've done the evaluation work. and you just kind of rock with that. And I think, you know, I like the two picks from last year. I didn't see what they saw in Vukcevic, you know, pre-draft. Also didn't watch a ton, but I kind of didn't know there was as much there as there was beyond just the shooting. And so I'm already like, okay, they found somebody there that I didn't put much, you know, emphasis on. So I'm going to, they know what they're doing. I hope so. That's what I'm
looking for. Vucevic is a great find.
Yeah.
You know, and it's tough to find something like that when you know, like you said, who knew? Mm-hmm. And then the process, how they didn't bring him in right away, get some development. You know, a lot of guys who would have been that pick that he was probably would have had to be on the bench this year.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, and so sat, like you said, at this moment, I'm trusting the front office.
Yeah.
And they haven't given me a reason not to so far. So let's see what they do. And then everybody's going to have an opinion about the draft this year, whoever they draft.
Mm-hmm.
But these are some unique players this year, especially 1-4. So you just say, all right, okay, they've done their research more than anybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those drafts.
Even in years where it seems like there's this really tight consensus on, like, these are the guys everybody thinks are the top five, when you go back 2, 3, 4 years later, it never works out that way. So
yeah.
I don't really care if they draft consensus, if they find a guy that's slotted, you know, 11th on the consensus mock and take him third. I don't care. Like, just do what you think fits the blueprint of the team you're trying to build. And hopefully they're watching what's working in the playoffs right now. And that's influencing, you know, length, multi-positional versatility, guys that can pass, dribble, shoot. Like, that's what helps. And just circling back to something you said a minute ago about the top players don't like to play defense. I totally agree with that. But I think a lot of times when you see the teams that are winning titles, their best players can play defense.
Yeah.
They may not want to do it the full regular season and all that stuff, but these guys can lock in when they want to. Like, LeBron is maybe not the most consistent defender, but he's 6'8", 9", 280, whatever, and he moves his feet real well. So good luck scoring over him if he doesn't want you to. Durant locked people up. Kawhi locked people up. Even like Steph Curry is a better defender than I think he got credit for. And he was surrounded by a lot of really good defenders. Jokic may not get credit as being a very good defender. He's also huge and he takes up a lot of space at the rim. So
Anthony Edwards.
Right.
Both of them, actually. Anthony Davis protects the basket for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Anthony Edwards, I mean, he takes defense just as seriously as he takes offense.
Yep.
Right. Sure. And that's more infectious than anything.
Yep. Yeah. When you see your best player like slapping the floor and clapping at people, like everybody else is like, all right, let's get it.
Let's go. We're riding with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, those are things I would think about. I get, when I say something like this, the response I get was like, well, it's a buckets league. And you've mentioned the Bill Russell quote too about you got to put the ball in the hoop. But like, I get that. But I also just think the best player on the team at least has to be a capable defender situationally. And so some of these guys that are projected in like the top 10 here, I don't see a world where they like ever really defend. And I just think that caps your ceiling. It's not that you can't be a good team with a Trae Young as your best player, or even somebody like Luka. He doesn't really guard anybody most of the time, but you're seeing their ceiling capped as a team because of it. So he's really good. He's going to accrue a ton of stats. He's a great player. But, you know, that ultimately, I think you sort of max out at a certain point, unless you've built your team perfectly around those guys to make up for it. Like, you know, if Jason Tatum wants to turn the water off on a player, he can do it. They don't need him to do it every possession. But, you know, like, he has the tools to do that. So that's what I'd be kind of focusing on. That's why the Kentucky guards scare me a little bit. Like Reed Sheppard, 5th overall, he's really a 6'2" shooting guard. He was pretty good collegiately as a defender, but also he played next to Rob Dillingham, another top 10 pick, who was kind of awful defensively. So I feel like teams didn't pick on Reed because they already had Rob to pick on. And for that reason, like, both of those guys with a top 3, 4, 5 pick would make me a little nervous, despite they're both incredible offensive talents. So Just with that thinking in mind, like that's probably the guys I would steer away from a top couple pick. Yeah. But, you know, if you're picking sixth or something and the five guys you really like are off the board and you just say, hey, I'm going to get Rob Dillingham and he's my off the bench microwave scorer for the next decade. Like, I wouldn't really hate that either. You lock down a very important role for every team. So,
yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, that wouldn't be the guy I probably would get either. But going back to what you said about defense and about the good players.
Mm-hmm.
Good players have a lot of counters and and counters to the counters and ways to get down here, ways to get up, ways right to get open. Mm-hmm. A lot of different things. That's what makes them good players.
Yep.
So, which means they can not only sense when to use those moves, but they can sense also when to defend those same moves. Mm-hmm. Everything I do as a player. Everything that's in my toolbox, I also know how to stop because I use it. I create it.
Right. I know what stops me when I do it. Yeah.
Right. So all good players are good defenders just because they have more information to read. They may have more things that they can detect before anybody else. I mean, only thing of defending is just detecting something.
Yeah.
Right. Before it happens. All right, I can detect this because I already know how I use it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's all defense. Defense is just a choice with most guys, even though it doesn't seem like it. He's not willing. He don't want to buy in because to with a choice of defense, like basketball. Most people play basketball to put the ball in the rim. That's the excitement of the game. That's why they scream a player's name when you were growing up, Kobe or Magic or right. No one ever been on defense and said Rodman.
Right. Ron Harper.
Yeah. Right. Ron Harper. Those names, the best defensive players' names don't ever get screamed out because there's no excitement in it. That's why you don't see great defensive players get MVPs. You know, it's no award. I mean, probably most valuable defender, like whatever player, whatever that is, but cool. Yeah. You know, but that's the only thing. Right. You can see no highlights of defense on ESPN.
Yeah, maybe a chase down block from the playoffs or something like that.
And that's just like a Wimby.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? But so, you know, it's definitely there. But until they start making defense just as luxurious as scoring, it's going to be what it is. The players are not going to be eager to just play, do it.
Early in the year, friends of the show here, Riley Richards was talking about Steph Castle from UConn. Really like Steph Castle. And I was like, all right, well, he can't really shoot. What's he do on offense? But I've really come around on that, especially seeing him. But it's like hearing the stuff around that program. You got like a crazy person and Danny Hurley talking about like, hey, this freshman came in and was instantly like, cool, I'm the best defender on the team now. It's like a defending national championship. And they had Fox Sports broadcaster John Fanta talk about. He talked to Castle on Big East Media Day at the beginning of the year, and he asked him like, "What kind of player, you know, are you going to be? What kind of UConn, you know, what can UConn fans expect for you?" He's like, "I'm going to be the best defender that they see all year." The first thing out of his mouth, and this is a guy, you know, came in as a top five recruit, projected as a top five pick. Like, the first thing out of his mouth is about how he's going to be the lockdown guy on the team. And then he went out and did it all year. That would mean something to me. And I would think if I had a good enough development staff and I had faith in the people in my organization, like, okay, he drives well. He's pretty athletic. He passes the ball well. He's got a good handle. So we just got to refine the shot. Like, that wouldn't deter me if I had, you know, faith in how I had built my organization out. It's somebody I would consider a lot, you know, with the top three or four pick too.
Yeah. In the day, you get a guy like that on a team, that can be infectious. But that's somebody who said, "I'm coming in. I don't care, you know, who the leaders are, who the captain of the team is. I am going to put my imprint on this team."
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you're determined to put your imprint on the team, that's when it becomes infectious.
Mm-hmm. And just the ego check of I'm this top five guy who scored a lot at the high school level. And I like this team doesn't need me to do that. He knew what that roster looked like and right. still chose to go there. So I think that says a lot about him, too. And this is a guy you want in your organization of just, oh, you give me a role, I'll play it. And I've got the ability to do more. Cool. I'll scale up to it. So I think that's a good culture kind of move. Just for anybody, again, if I didn't mention this already yet, but the draft lottery is Sunday. It's at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be on ESPN. They do the actual picking in advance. So once we see it on the show, you know, that's already been decided. I'm curious to see who goes and represents the Wizards. My guess is it's probably Michael Winger or Will Dawkins, one of those guys. But yeah, that'll be, you know, interesting to see. It's a huge moment for the franchise, I think, just to get like some excitement going back in here. Like,
yeah, I mean,
the building will be more hyped next year if it's a pick, you know, fans can kind of like resonate.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Have you heard? Sling TV offers the news you love for less.
Hey, wait. You look and sound just like me. I am you. I'm the same news programs on Sling TV for less.
You mean you're me, but for less money.
A lot less. I'm all the favorite news programs and more on Sling TV starting at just $40 a month.
Everything great about me, but for less money?
Which makes me greater, don't you think? Get the news you love and more for less.
Start saving today. Visit sling.com to see your offer.
Sling.
Yeah, I agree. And just to see somebody representing the team, you know, from the front office, guys you don't see, you know. The Wizards need some to be put out there a little bit.
Yeah, some good press.
Right, some good press, right? Especially from guys who don't see us a lot. Because no matter what, unless we're playing a good team or we're not a team that people see a lot, right? It's just, sorry to say, it's always, you know, right now, if we were playing the Orlando Magic in the playoffs, it might be one of those games that a lot of people still wouldn't care about right now.
Yeah, they put you on NBA TV at noon on a Sunday for that game.
Right, even though we're in the playoffs, if we were.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make them have an appeal for us again.
Yeah, I agree. And it can't be the, like, we talked about this before, but like if it wasn't Shaq and a Fool, they didn't talk about us on Inside the NBA once all year. So you can't be that team for very long. And hopefully this front office kind of does that. One way that they could probably get a little bit more positive publicity here is just making a couple splashes with who they bring in for some of these coaching searches. We're like the only team without a head coach that I haven't heard at least one public announcement about. Apparently David Aldridge was on the Sports Junkies here in the area today and said that the team will start doing interviews next week. He mentioned Darvin Ham from the Lakers, formerly of the Lakers, as a potential candidate. And, you know, that was somebody I really liked the idea of the last time the Wizards did a coaching search.
Darvin.
Yeah. Like a tough, physical, no-nonsense kind of guy who played in the league. I thought that would have been a good move. I didn't particularly like what I saw from the Lakers experience. So
yeah, man.
I'd be kind of out on that one personally. But so if that's the case, I'd rather just keep Brian Keefe of those two options. But it'll be interesting to kind of see who are the actual names at this point. I guess David Aldridge also sort of intimated that like the Mike Budenholzers of the world would not be considered. So those are guys that they want to be plug and play back into a winning situation. If you're a championship winning coach, you're not going to come in here and sit through a rebuild. Like that's just not, he can get a better job than this, unfortunately. So you've got to hit on like the young assistant coach kind of guy or, you know, something like that. That's the move I would kind of go with, like a young creative dude that sort of gives you a little splash of energy. And that's another way to get positive publicity is if they kind of overachieve to start the year next year, like your coach gets a little hype, like maybe this guy's got a little juice to him. I think that would help them to make like a cool, you know, kind of, you know, out of left field sort of hire. Not that keeping Keefe is that, but like the Mark Dagnolt kind of picks and Will Hardy's and those kind of guys that have like Jamal Mosley, like who are those dudes? But they've done well, like taking a guy. Like I've no matter what, people keep throwing out like Mark Jackson here in Washington. Some reason there's a percentage of Wizards fans that love Mark Jackson. He will never coach another NBA team again. And I just don't want to see it.
Hate to see it, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, like he's not coming back. And for me, I don't want like that retread guy. Like I wouldn't want Doc Rivers. You know, like I just give me somebody new that can kind of come up with this team and grow with the group a little bit. That would be more exciting to me as a fan, I think, than you know, somebody that's coached a bunch of other places in the past and been kind of, you know, mad the last couple times.
Well, I guess it depends on how much you want somebody with coaching experience in the NBA, right? Yeah. What pedigree do you want, right? Thing is, too, a lot of coaches will be jumping at the opportunity to take this Washington Wizards job in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But then there's also coaches who wouldn't. You know, and you got to see it both ways. Just because they're on the coaching list, you know, does, you know, if potential guys they, you know, the organization wants to reach out to, mm-hmm. don't mean they're so gung-ho about taking that job. You know, exactly. Just like a lot of guys would love to take the Lakers job, but believe it or not, the Lakers job is one of the jobs you would rather not touch.
It's like, tough, yeah.
It's just like when Kentucky. You thought every college coach would want to go get that Kentucky job once Calipari left.
It was just leverage.
They all ran from it. Right. Certain jobs like that. Mm-hmm. And it goes both ways. The Lakers would be like the opposite end of that spectrum, but it's always like the Wizards can be the other end of that spectrum as well. So to me, when you look at that, you know, say, okay, do I go with somebody with a lot of NBA experience and coaching? Or do I go with somebody who's have a lot of coaching experience, but was in the NBA? Mm-hmm. And to me, if I take the latter or the one with the coaching experience, but play in the NBA, mm-hmm. first person I would go directly target is Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah, that's been a favorite for both of us, I think, for a long time here. Like, it just makes sense, and people will blow off.
And he's playing for the Wizards.
Right, exactly. Well, that might scare some Wizards fans away of, oh, it's Wes 2.0 kind of stuff. But he takes no bullshit. People remember it. Like, I think even kids of this age, you know, kids of Jesus, I sounded the oldest shit right there. The 27-year-olds on the Wizards are probably old enough to at least know of Jerry Stackhouse, the player and caliber player he was. He commands a certain amount of respect. He's got G League coaching experience. He's been in the NBA as an assistant. And running a college program like Vanderbilt is a really hard job. It doesn't work out for many people for a reason. So dismissing him because Vanderbilt didn't make a bunch of NCAA tournaments is idiotic to me. Like it's almost impossible.
Especially the caliber of players you're getting at Vanderbilt in comparison to the rest of the SEC. Right.
Yep. You can't take transfers in. They have to have a certain academic standing right off the bat. Like, it's really hard to do that. And if you ask any coach who was hard to game plan for in the SEC, their immediate response was always, Jerry Stackhouse runs elite NBA stuff. Like, he is the better, one of the better offensive minds, you know, in that whole conference. So, so to me, that would be interesting. And you also, he might be a guy that you could maybe get as a top assistant or something too. Like, if he doesn't get, he's not going back to another college job probably this year. And if he does, there's only so many open head coaching jobs. So I'm assuming he's going to want to work somewhere. Like, Juwan Howard joined the staff as an assistant coach. Like, if you get somebody like Stackhouse one seat over on the bench, that'd be an all-time steal to me. Like, you do what you're doing with the front office, with the coaching staff, and build your own little super friends there too. Like, now we're cooking.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think one seat over wouldn't be bad at all. But as a head coach,
I'd love it.
Right. Reason I'm saying is one seat over is, as a, from a player's perspective, I'm cool with the coach one seat over, but he can only tell me so much.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. Only person that was very effective as a one seat over coach was Mike Brown.
Okay, interesting.
Right. I mean, because his personality is just his personality. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would do hold you accountable for a lot of things. Now, but to me, that guy that's at the head, that monster at the head, that, you know, well, all the assistant coaches would kind of buy into his mentality, his DNA, is Jerry Stackhouse. Because the assistant's going to buy in line. The player's going to buy in line. Like, that's a DNA that's unique for especially what the Wizards need at this point.
It's one of those things where, like, certain lineup decisions last year under Wes Unseld, it was like, all right, I get he's like trying to win this game, and I get wanting to put, like, maybe you feel better about a vet winning you the game, but I also would rather see this young guy. Like, Stackhouse has just motivated younger guys for the last couple years as well. So there's something about reaching young people. They largely, honestly, overachieved given the level of talent they had, that they were even a fringe tournament team a couple of those years. And it's just, I think he would command a certain amount of respect here, but also just like, he's just an MF-er, right? Like, that would be a cool vibe to have kind of trickle down through the rest of the roster. Like, we might not be talented enough to get us now, so you better, like, that was the Danny Hurley quote that I loved. And it was like, oh, this dude is like, he's got something cooking here at UConn. Before they were really good, he was like, hey, people better enjoy getting their licks in now, because it's not going to last. And you know, like, that, the vibe you got to have of like, hey, we're not winning stuff, but that's temporary. Though, like, well, you know, we didn't guard anybody, so we don't play defense, and guys aren't accountable. Like, I'm just sick of that shit. It's been 10 years of that, right? Like, hey, be ready for us. Cause, like, you know, like, we're gonna take it to you in 2 years from now. So we're building toward that. So this is a learning experience. Like, that's the kind of stuff I want to hear. So whatever coach gives you that vibe, go get that person.
Well, I think that'll also solidify the front office right away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, this is what we're doing. Oh, so this is really a new regime and a new chain for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Oh, okay. We haven't like, don't take no shit type of players here. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now we understand what the front office, their mentality is.
Right.
Because we having this type of coach here. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can recycle coaches that's always been around the league, or recycle new coaches that's trying to get new jobs, but they're still just, you know, it's like politicians. You just keep, you know,
So we're running it back.
Yeah, running it back. This right here, the entire city would be behind this move.
I think so too.
It makes sense, and they will automatically understand how no nonsense the coach. You know, they understand how no nonsense Jerry is. So, like, okay, let's go. Oh, we get it now. We got a chance.
There are a certain amount of people that wouldn't get the hire just given, like, well, he didn't even win in college. Like, that's a casual take. I hate saying, like, casuals, or, you know, like, that's an annoying phrase to me, but, like, that kind of would be how I'd look at that of, like, well, you know, he didn't win at Vanderbilt. Like, but to me, if the front office makes a move like that, you probably know what the stigma is with certain hires with the fan base. So it's like, They wouldn't. That means they don't care. They're just going to get their guy, and that's all they're worried about. And that's right. More important to me too. Of just like, we've got a plan. This is the guy to execute that plan. We're not worried about anything else here. Like, the PR be damned. Mm-hmm. Although if you're Ted Leontis, think of all the nostalgia merch you can sell if you also have a former player coaching the team for the second time in a row.
Yeah.
So, the t-shirt giveaways from Robin Hood and FTX and all that stuff.
But you can also promote the coach as much as you promote the player.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you never really put the coach on all the t-shirts.
Exactly.
You know,
the coach doesn't get a bobblehead night very often.
I can do a bobblehead of the coach.
I think Ted's ears just stood up here, hearing that.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5, or with a breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. Speaking of the front office, really good nugget from Bijan Todd of Monumental Sports. He said that Michael Winger and Will Dawkins talked about how they approached Corey Kispert heading into this past season, and said they gave him like a really straight up analysis of like, here's how people around the league view you. And, you know, it's like you're going to get up a couple 3-pointers and, you know, maybe stretch the floor a little. And that's all people think of you. So they talked to him about sort of his 3-point volume and how he needed to be more effective as a driver to kind of be more than one dimensional. So Dawkins said, we had a similar conversation with Corey, and it was like, this is how people view you around the league. And this is the guy who you got to run off the 3-point line and then you're good. But you don't hunt enough threes. There are players that are around the league with the same number of threes taken per 100 possessions as you. And he was like, yeah, that ain't it. So Dawkins also said he made a massive jump, extended his range, improved his arc, kept the efficiency high, and then was elite getting to the rim. I think he finished in like the 89th or 90th percentile finishing at the rim, while also being able to shoot the ball, stretch the defense, and he was able to take pride in finishing games while not being targeted either end of the floor. Spot on, right? Like, I think what they just said is what we saw from him and what, you know, we were talking about before the year is you got to do more than one thing, and you got to do that one thing well also. So a guy that shoots 40% from three, we talked about this last episode, is only so valuable if he takes two a game. But if you shoot 38% from three on 7 attempts, that's much more impactful, especially when you can drive and finish, you know, 70% around the rim. Like, that's a player you can build on.
Yeah. So watching Corey from last year to this year, I felt like he was more aggressive
mm-hmm.
on first on the three-point line, but just trying to get the ball in the basket. And I was saying, he's really hunting threes.
Yeah.
I wasn't saying it in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying it in the like
too many, he, forcing kind of thing.
Well, I didn't say it was forced. It just seemed like he didn't care about not putting them up.
Got it. Okay.
So I looked at him like, well, and so I always equated it to, well, he went from starting to now he's not getting as much time. So gotcha. He's trying to squeeze as many points in this time that he's getting.
Yep.
So then reading what they were saying about him today, I was like, so this was what they wanted for him and what he was mean. That's what was meant to do.
Yep.
Right. So what happened to me is like, because when he came in, he was putting up shots. He was making these
not shy. Yeah.
He wasn't shy. He was like, oh, it's touching my hand. I'm making something happen. Going up either way, or I'm getting to the basket or something. So what really, this article really opened my eyes up to my thought process of how do I look, my perspective of looking at it first to what it really was. Yep. And so it's kind of refreshing to see this article in that way. But also, it's refreshing to know that that was his advice.
Mm-hmm.
That was the advice that was given to him. Because no player wants to play. You know how you can look at in this league? I don't care what the answer is.
That conversation never ends well. Yeah.
Like, no, I don't care what the answer they give me after that.
Yep.
You know, you're like, no, I don't want to know because because it's never good.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're a superstar and everyone's afraid of you. Together.
Yeah. So, it's good to know he took that advice and really, really ran with it. So I have to now change my perspective of how he played this year because I felt like he was like, hey, I'm playing for me and I'm getting it. I know exactly what minutes I'm allocated and I'm going to try in all these minutes to get as much buckets as I can. That's what they told him to do.
Yep.
And so he did what they told him to do.
This is always something I try to remind myself as a fan, like, especially I think NBA defense is so much more complicated than us as fans give it credit for. Like, you've lived it, so you get this. But like, for just us, you know, the fan watching the game, it's like, I actually don't know whose fault that was. I don't know what the scheme was. I don't know who was supposed to rotate there. Maybe they didn't want the closest person to help. Maybe that was part of the scouting report. So to me, this is also just, if you kind of like, I'm not expecting them to give out like state secrets or anything, but when the front office is transparent about things that they're trying to get people to do and work on and the vision for the team and how they want to build the team, it's much easier to sit back as a fan and be like, oh, okay. Like, this is what we're building toward. I feel better about what, you know, this direction or this move or whatever the case may be. So-and-so never helps on defense. Well, he's a bad teammate. Maybe they don't want that guy to help. Like, that's cool insight. And I'm glad that they're being,
sometimes it's good to be exposed to the bigger picture.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I'm glad that they did that. I'm glad Bijan got that take. And Corey actually said a little bit, you know, about that too. He said attacking the rim changed everything. It seemed like my first 2 years, if I put the ball on the floor, the other team was just cool with it. That's what they wanted me to do. But now it felt a little bit different. It felt like there were multiple layers to what teams had to do to stop what I was trying to do. Just because I had to put the ball on the deck doesn't mean the defense's job is done anymore. It's a cool thing as a player to feel like you have a little bit more respect from the defense than you've ever had before, and people know that you're a threat. So to me, this is a really good step one, and you can figure out the right balance next year. Is it more threes? Is it more drives? You know, like, now that you've got sort of the basics down there, how you implement that longer term, you can tinker with what's the right mix of those things. But it shows that they gave him directions and he learned and, you know, adjusted and acclimated to what they wanted him to do. And that's also a player I'm much more interested in keeping around longer term too, because he's more malleable than we thought. And he gets where they're trying to go, and he didn't sulk or, you know, take it the wrong way or do something kind of crazy and reckless that was opposite of what, oh, you said I can't do this. Well, I'm going to show you the other thing. It was, they told him what they wanted him to do and he went out and did it. Like, that's cool. I want more guys like that.
Yeah. And what they brought to him and what they asked him to do, that is what we need from you.
Yep.
Don't think it was that easy.
Right. Especially exactly.
Because you got to think about, there's three things a perimeter player has to perfect. to be a great perimeter player. He has to shoot well, you know, shoot a high percentage. He has to get downhill. Getting downhill sounds something. You got to get a, you got to get past the first defender and the second defender. That's the art in itself. So now he's saying, I have to learn how to get downhill, right? That's a skill in itself, and it's not something you get overnight, because a lot of people can't pass up the defender that's in their face, and they're in the NBA, right? Then once you get downhill, you got to learn how to finish.
It's another third hard wrinkle too to add in.
So what they asked him to do was like, hey, we know you can shoot. Now you have to learn how to get downhill,
right?
Get through defenders, read the defense, adjust. Maybe they have to do a Euro step, make quick decisions, and finish at the rim amongst bigs.
It's a lot.
Right? So understand the process of that summer when they brought him that information of all the things he had to work on to be the player that he is now today. So it's not, they didn't drop a little light thing on him. They put some weight on him. It's like, all right, this is what you got to do. Get in the NBA, the best players in the world.
What that says to me, too, is that maybe he had the ability to do some of those things. He may have just not had the confidence to do it or felt empowered to do it. So that's also them building a player up to say, no, we think you can do more here. It's not, it probably wasn't, hey, here are these three new complicated things you have, dynamics you have to add to your game. It's, well, you can do this piece. Now put that together. Now put it with this piece. Like, that's another good sign from them, too, is that they're, one, they evaluated their own guy correctly and saw that, you know, he's capable of doing these things. And two, you know, they built him up enough to want to go out and do it. And then he showed he can do it. So I think that's a win-win-win from the org so far.
I agree.
Last thing I just want to get your take on here before we wrap up. Apparently the Pacers filed 49 calls that they felt were incorrect in game two of their series against the Knicks to the NBA office. And they also sent another 29 in from game one that they also said were previously, or, you know, that they said were incorrect for, from that game as well. So that's 78 calls over two games that they're saying, you know, were botched calls basically. And my good buddy Austin, who sent me the tweet about this, was saying like, he was kind of glad that, like, he kind of liked that they did that because maybe that gets them even one or two more calls in a future game. To me, I'm a petty person, so if I were a referee and I knew that they had shit all over the job I was doing, I wouldn't be doing them any extra favors, you know? Like, I'd be continuing to call it the way I called it. So, I don't know. Do you think this helps a team like that? Is there any benefit from actually doing this? Or does it hurt them in any way? Or is it just a non-issue kind of thing?
I think it'll help that team in a sense.
Okay.
But what it does is, all it's going to do is make the referees call the game so tight that it's not going to even be a game to play.
A foul thing.
It's really going to work the opposite. Okay, so you saying we missed this many calls? If we think about the game, if they didn't miss all the calls that they put out there, you wouldn't even want to watch that game. Like, it's the game would not be watchable, right?
Yeah, it would take 4 hours to finish probably too.
Yeah, like, so the refs are always, it's going to be always calls being missed. It's going to be always calls being purposely missed.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to sometimes be too many calls at the beginning of the game because they're trying to dictate the way the game is going to be played. All right, that's not what we're going to tolerate. We're not going to do this. So we're going to call a lot at the first half. I mean, the first quarter, we're going to just go crazy with the whistle. Referees do that. Just control the pace of the game, control everything, right? Which is cool, but it's just the playoffs. You got to let these players play in the playoffs.
That's what people are there to see, right?
Too many whistles being blown. Maybe it's going to be calls that you felt should have went your way to dictate the game.
Mm-hmm.
But if it didn't happen within the last minute of the game, then you put yourself in that situation. You know what I'm saying?
Have you thought the refereeing officiating has been bad during this playoffs? Like, it's been a kind of common theme, I think, but I don't know.
I feel like it's too many whistles. And then it's too many whistles and they're inconsistent.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? So the same whistle they'll blow for something early, they won't blow for something later, or something that they have missed all game. And then, you know, right at the end of the game, they blow it for a screen or something. Yeah. They're saying that dictates the game. Well, mm-hmm. Throughout the game, it's been at least 50 screens set. Wrong, illegal, perfect.
What you call it, yeah.
That you didn't consider at all. Yeah. So now why would you consider this one? Mm-hmm. So, but that's referees. You know, I never really understood. You know how I feel about it. Yep. I never really figured the referees out with this. And sometimes it's power. Sometimes it's just, it's not making any sense. It's just too much inconsistency. And then they have a 2-minute report that does absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? What does a 2-minute report do once you got an L?
You should have to publicly respond to it, honestly. Like somebody they should have to do post-game interview during with that 2-minute report also.
Right. And if the refs do bad, right? Say for instance, the refs do something that's terrible and they get fined for it.
Yeah.
You and I would never know.
Exactly.
Like, so we need to know who got fined.
Yeah. You admitting later that a call was blown does nothing for me. No. But if I know that that guy can't work my game the next time because of it, maybe I feel a little better about that at least.
You feel some type of recourse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the series that you mentioned, like too many whistles, I feel like a lot of times in the Minnesota games I've watched so far, they're letting them play, which is really to their advantage.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been pretty good about, like, other than Kat, who makes like a couple of weird, like random slappy reach in fouls or lunges at somebody. But for the most part, they're just like, hey, we're going to be long. We're going to be in your way and you're going to have to shoot tough jumpers over us. But they're still getting in people. And there are other series I've watched where those same things they wouldn't be able to get away with, too. So just even from series to series, the vibe feels different. And that shouldn't happen. If the league just said, we're calling everything this whole playoffs, I can live with that. I wouldn't like it, but I could live with it. Or, hey, we're calling nothing this whole playoffs. I'd like that a little bit more, probably, and I could live with it. But you shouldn't go from the 7 p.m. game to the 9:30 game and feel like they're working on almost totally different rules. That's what's crazy.
Exactly. And that's the inconsistency. Game per game, playoff per playoff. Two teams, you know, playing each other series is completely different than the other.
Yeah.
And like, to the point you become to expect exactly how this game is going to get called. Oh, this series is going to get called this way.
Yep.
This one is going to be a lot of banging. It's going to be old school. They're going to play here. Right. And say for instance, one day it changes. You're like, well, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. It kills college teams too. Like the Big Ten is like the rock fight, slug it out league. And then they get to the NCAA tournament and they're all fouls. And you see like there's no Big Ten teams that have won in 20 years. Like you can't tell me that doesn't have an impact. So I think you do do teams a disservice when you're not sort of putting them all on sort of equal footing, I guess. So
yeah,
we'll see how
it goes.
All right, Jad, I think that's all I got. Any parting thoughts here? All right. We'll cross our fingers. We'll see how this goes Sunday. Depending on what the pick is, maybe I'll try to do something just a quick immediately after with a reaction, just to throw something up there. If something crazy happens, we get one or six or whatever, if it's noteworthy, we'll try to get something up. Otherwise, we'll be back next week. We'll check with you all. So Believe in Wizards. If you're watching on YouTube, click that little like button for us. Always subscribe. That's all helpful too. You don't have to wait to see the tweet that says the show went up. That's always easier. But yeah, reviews are always nice. If you're finding yourself on iTunes later, appreciate that. We're presented by betonline.ag, and we will catch y'all next time. Hopefully with the number one pick in hand.
Yeah, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, No, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my Glad Stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, y'all know I love McDonald's for a quick meal, especially if I'm out and about with the boys and need something to eat. I like food, and y'all know I like saving money, too. Did you know that you can save money with deals in the McDonald's app every single day? Yeah, you heard that right. There's a deal every day in the app. So if you are an avid McDonald's goer like me, you'll find the best value for your buck by using the app. One of my favorite things about the app is the ability to order ahead. So let's say I'm on the road, just picked up Axel from school, and know I promised him some McDonald's fries and a sundae, but don't want to have to wait in that long line. I open up the app and just place my order there. Then I can walk in and pick up my order when it's ready, no wait needed, especially if I time it right. And I love that you can also get a bunch of deals in the app as well. I just logged in and can get a free Big Mac with a minimum purchase of $1. But check it every day because the deals are always changing. Plus, make sure to share your birthday so McDonald's can celebrate with you with something special. Dream drivers save money with the McDonald's app. Nope, you must opt into rewards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.